You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where, of course, we talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East. I cover the Pacers for Forbes, the West Indianapolis Community News, and the Fieldhouse today. Fun episode. We're going to be talking Pacers-Lakers again. I know we did Monday to cover the 2000 Finals Game 2, but today is actually about a game that would have happened in real life today. Today would have been Pacers-Lakers Part 2. The Pacers beat the Lakers back in December. Today I want to talk about the second game. I tried to get a Lakers person on to talk about them because Anthony Davis didn't play last time these guys matched up, and they also made some buyout acquisitions that could be discussed how the Lakers do now, but all of my Lakers guys were busy. I literally reached out to three people and all three could not do it. So it'll just be me. And because it's just me and we're not doing the full show, two more things. So I wrote an article about how the falling salary cap could affect the Pacers. I'll talk a little bit about that. And then a player season recap I can fit into a short segment. Nazmi Trulong. So we'll have both. I did Brian Bowen last week. We'll have both of the two-way players done. And everybody will be a little more familiar with. So let's start with the Lakers. Man, how fun was that game back in December? So recently on Twitter, there's been some people talking about their favorite Pacers games of the year because Fox Sports Indiana aired the game in Denver. The Pacers went in Denver two nights ago, last night. And that was my favorite game of the year. I mean, just that massive fourth quarter comeback. Doug McDermott was electric. It was just such a unique game. It's rare that McDermott is the spearheader of a comeback. I love those kind of games. But the Lakers game, everybody loved because they beat LeBron. They beat the Lakers. And that is a totally valid reason for it to be your favorite game of the year. And that game was really special and unique, too, for different reasons, right? We got to see some of, the box score-wise, kind of a typical win you'd expect from the Pacers, right? They got dominant play from their bigs. Sabonis was awesome. He had 26 points. Turner was great. He had 16 points. He was really good on defense with two blocks, and we'll talk more about his impact on defense in a minute. Brogdon was pretty good in this game. Their bench was awesome. It was like a typical Pacers December win when they were playing really well. But that's not why it was unique to me. It's because without Anthony Davis, we kind of got to see how the Pacers would defend stars with this iteration of the team, and like we'd seen them play Giannis and stuff. But I just like seeing how they try to strategize against these guys. And LeBron played 34 minutes. He had 20 points on 20 shots. That is a successful game. You win against the Lakers because of that. They actually got outscored by the Lakers when LeBron was not in the game. They actually got outscored by, I believe, 4 points. I can't do math. 6 points. but outscored the Lakers by 9 when LeBron was out there. That's why they're able to win. And so LeBron is a beast. He's probably the best player ever, or maybe the second best player ever, however you want to slice it. But something he's really predictable at is when he goes left, a lot of the times when he goes left, he's going to the rim. When he goes right, he's pulling up. The Pacers did a really nice job of forcing him, and some of this is the threat of Turner, and some of this is the way they were swarming him and, kind of letting other guys do, whatever. Okay, Jared Dudley's going to shoot whatever. I don't care. The Pacers don't care about that. So they were letting him settle for the threes, and he took 6 of them. He missed all 6, and he missed that big one at the end. I mean, Rondo missed the one to tie, but he missed a big one at the end with Turner doing a fantastic job on him. And that game plan was fascinating to watch. It made other guys beat them. And, for example, Dwight Howard, right? A lot of the times they said, okay, we're stopping LeBron no matter what. So as soon as LeBron would get that step on his guy and get into the lane, they wanted him to give up the ball. And so they were like, okay, well, like a lot of times we get on Goga because he's caught in no man's land between the lob man and the dunker on alley-oops. That was kind of the plan. It's like, make LeBron make that pass. That's why Dwight looked amazing in this game. But really, it was all strategy of, we don't want LeBron to kill us. And it worked really well. Seeing LeBron, I mean, he had 20 points, 9 rebounds, 9 assists. So damn near a triple-double. And I consider that a win because he had 20 points on 20 shots and 5 turnovers. They really did a nice job strategizing on him and making all the other guys, do their thing well. And this is before the Lakers. First of all, Anthony Davis didn't play. Huge caveat. They also transformed their roster to get a few. They didn't have Kuzma either, did they? Right? I don't think they had Kuzma in this game. So they were missing some firepower. But it was also before they got Markieff Morris, and I forget they got someone else. But anyway, they made a small transformation of sorts to their rotation, and Markieff Morris would really help because in this game in that first game specifically, they were kind of lacking the forward production. You know, Dudley started 3 points in 14 minutes, didn't really give him anything. Off the bench, they really didn't have any fours. They had to play Troy Daniels 12 minutes, right, because they could slide other guys to the four. LeBron played a lot of fours. So they were really missing a lot of depth at the four in this game, and that's why the Pacers were able to game plan the way they were, is they were able to say, okay, we'll make these perimeter guys who can't do anything on the perimeter but shoot do perimeter things, and it really worked. You know, they made a lot of guys really uncomfortable over the course of the game. On the flip side, the Pacers did a nice job of saying, hey, they've got good big man defenders on the inside. You know, JaVale, fantastic defender. He still had a good game. He had three blocks and was all over the place. Dwight, same kind of thing. They're pretty good defending inside. Not as good defending outside. Give Sabonis the ball a lot. Four assists, 26 points. Give Turner the ball a lot on the perimeter. Took six threes, hit half of them, including some huge ones in the fourth quarter, and we'll be good to go. And then, of course, the Lakers not very deep. Pacers bench was able to roll. So the reason that this game would be different in L.A. is because they'd have all their power forwards. Because a lot of the advantages the Pacers had in the first game, they can still make the Lakers' big stretch out. They could still, in theory, game plan LeBron the same way. They could make the Lakers' perimeter guys, not named Rondo, try to dribble and stuff, which is not their forte. Their bench is still much, much better than the Lakers' bench. They have Oladipo back, right? They could do so much of the same stuff, and they'd get smoked. They'd get absolutely smoked because Anthony Davis is a monster, and they did not have him. And they're, you know, like, their production at power forward was abysmal the first time. And Anthony Davis is a monster. Like, I cannot say enough nice things about Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis is averaging more points and rebounds than LeBron this year. Obviously, LeBron's a better player, but Anthony Davis has been that good. He's averaging 27 and 9.5 points on over 50% shooting. Oh, and he's, like, the fifth best defender in basketball, probably better. Like, that's such a big thing. And then to also have Kuzma to give them more forward depth, and to also have Markieff Morris, who's just a warm body at forward who doesn't totally suck. I mean, I think this game would have been interesting because the Pacers have some bench advantages, the same ones they had last time. McConnell specifically could just fly into the paint. Like, these guys were kind of sieves. But just, like, Sabonis would have had to defend the perimeter more. And defensively, they would have no answer for Anthony Davis. And now they have to rotate a little harder on the three-point line to stop some of these power forwards from just shooting over. I think this game would have been a blowout. And I love what the Pacers have done this year against good teams. They always seem to step up for these games when it matters. But, I mean, the Lakers just would have had their number. They almost got him without those guys on the road. I think this game would have been a complete blowout. Mostly just having Anthony Davis back is the swing factor for me, but it's just what it is. They're just better, and a lot of the things that went wrong for them the first time would be really, you know, they could try to replicate them, but as soon as, you know, one of those advantages is compromised, they're kind of all compromised. So this would have been a fun one because, of course, playing against the Lakers and LeBron is fun, but I think this would have been a pretty dominant Lakers win. But it is what it is. It's not actually going to happen, so we don't have to cover a loss tomorrow. Now, moving on, salary cap. A lot of stuff going on with the salary cap right now. Take a little break, and I want to talk about it. What's up, guys? Quick break here so we can talk about the great people over at Echelon. And Echelon Fit, this is a great time to get involved with them because if you're stuck at home, an exercise bike is the move here. To get fit in 2020, you don't have to join a gym or pay a ton for overpriced equipment. The best way to get in shape is the Echelon. Go to echelonfit.com to discover their EX1 connected fitness bikes that offer a high-quality at-home cycling experience at less than half the price of a Peloton. They make beautifully engineered products for busy moms, busy dads, first responders, elite athletes, anybody, whatever your activity level, they're great. They've got live on-demand studio classes, and if you'll love Echelon, if you're not satisfied, they'll give you your money back. It's great. Just go to echelonfit.com/LONBA to learn about their limited time free Apple iPad and complete the details of this exclusive offer. That's echelonfit.com/LONBA. Echelon Fit /LockedOnNBA to let them know that you came from us. So I've kind of discussed on this show before what it could look like, you know, just in general if the cap falls. But I want to talk a little bit more about it because I wrote about it, so now my thoughts are a little more organized, and there's just more stuff going on. So, for example, I mean, this is not related to the salary cap next year per se, but like right now around the league, Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN is reporting all this stuff about how player paychecks could stop happening because of a clause in the CBA called force majeure, which says if there's a catastrophic event that prevents games from happening, they don't have to pay players. So And because a lot of players opt for year-round checks instead of just when they're playing games, and I think you choose that when you sign your contract, a lot of guys only are going to get like 50% of their money if the season's canceled. So really interesting stuff going on. But salary cap, let's pivot to that, how it affects the Pacers. So the salary cap is based on basketball-related income revenue for the league. And if you know, when they do their projections, like mid-season, right, that was late January was last time this happened, what they do is they'll say, okay, oh, right now we've made 4% less than we thought we would by this point in the season, so our BRI is going to drop by 4%, so the salary cap will drop by 4%, boom, and then they make their projection or whatever. It wasn't that high, but that's how it goes. So obviously, if they lose games or games are canceled, there's no fans, there's a lot of reasons to suggest they would lose BRI. And remember, BRI is a projection. That's important. We'll get to why later. So that could cause the cap to drop. And that is still totally a possible thing. And I've talked about on the show before how that matters. I think the biggest – I have more specific numbers now so I can talk about it. But, like, the Pacers are already at $123 million guaranteed. And if they keep McConnell, it's a little higher than that, actually. So the tax was going to be, like, $138 million, no problem. They could spend the full MLE if they wanted. If the cap drops at all, right? If the tax gets close to like $134 million, all of a sudden the Pacers cannot afford Justin Holiday without being a tax team, right? Because they cannot offer the full taxpayer mid-level exception, which is going to be about $9.5-10 million next summer, assuming the cap falls at least, because the mid-level exceptions are tied to the cap. He could get that amount from other teams, and other teams are also going to be impacted like this, right? They are also going to be closer to the tax, but any team with less payroll than the Pacers all of a sudden is like, damn, right? We can outbid them for Justin Holiday. So that would be painful for the Pacers if the cap drops. He is probably, and by probably, I mean he is almost assuredly the most likely casualty of this. Now, the second most likely guy is TJ Leaf, because if they could, I'm sure they would like to get off of Leaf for nothing, and so they could have more money to keep Justin Holiday, because Justin Holiday is actually good and helps them, and Leaf does not. And I don't know, I would not be surprised to see a second-round pick and TJ Leaf for absolutely nothing trade this summer if any team with cap space would go for it. But I digress to say that I think now that we're seeing some of the pitfalls, you know, Toronto, for example, the city of Toronto, because of the coronavirus pandemic today, announced, well, yesterday for you all, that there'd be no public gatherings till like the end of June, right? They have a basketball team. That there's not going to be basketball till then. It's unless they think of some very, very creative solution, it's hard to imagine NBA games being played until very, very late, and there will be some loss of TV revenue involved there. There's been some murmurs about like shorter playoff series. Obviously, gate revenue's gone. So all that suggests, yeah, the cap could fall, and that could really suck for the Pacers to lose Justin Holiday just because, like, if it comes out after Justin Holiday signs with XYZ team, if it's not the Pacers, that, you know, the Pacers just couldn't offer that much money, and that's the only reason he left, that's going to suck. That would just suck for the Pacers. Something totally out of their control made them lose a contributor. Again, this impacts every team the same way. It is what it is. And to be fair, I'm just talking negative to Justin Holiday because, in general, they have – outside of Justin Holiday, they're only losing Jakarr Sampson and Alize, right? They're keeping an entire rotation of good, underpaid players, right? They're really well set for this. Like a lot of other teams, 76ers, for example, are going to be screwed. They're going to be paying a ginormous tax bill. The Wizards are going to be paying a giant tax bill. The Warriors, like, all these teams are screwed. They can't sign anyone anymore. The Pacers are at least not screwed. In fact, they'll have a very good NBA team still, no matter what. It's just Justin Holiday might be a casualty for it. In fact, I think the Pacers are one of the better teams set up because they signed so many guys long-term this summer for this cap situation. So good on Kevin Pritchard. It's a good, big summer. But I want to go back to what I said earlier about projections and why that matters, because I was reading this thread from Albert Namad, one of, if not the smartest cap guy on Twitter. Writes for heathoops.com. It's his own site. It's just ridiculous how good he is at cap stuff, CBL. He's talking about how the projections are made from season to season for BRI, right? So basically, they pick a revenue amount from 1 year, and if the TV deals come in, right, and that's a separate thing. That's baked into revenue. But all the other basketball revenue, they basically just like add some percentage to that and say, okay, that's how much it's going to grow. And they use that to project basketball-related income for the next season. That sets the salary cap. So that's the number that's going to drop from season to season. So that's what would make the cap drop. But what Albert pointed out, or what Namad, I don't know what the college says full name, but what Albert Namad pointed out on Twitter is the NBA Players Association and the NBA could decide instead to just base it on their actual true projected revenue as if the season was totally normal instead of basing it off of the prior season. And they can, you know, it's collectively bargained that they're able to do that. So what they could do is say, screw that, we lost money last year, right? Or they already cut exec salaries in the NBA, like for real. You know, maybe they're not going to lose a ton of money. But either way, they could say, okay, we lost that money, but we still project to make this much, and we know 49% goes to the players, so let's use this true projected revenue for a year so all these players don't get screwed and not paid, and then the cap won't drop at all. That would be great. I think a lot of people on the player side would be on board with that. With the owners, I'm not sure. It depends how much money they lose, but we'll see. I think that is a totally reasonable option if they can get all the parties on board and would cause the cap not to drop at all. That's all in an article. You can go read all about that on Forbes. Came out yesterday. Love plugging my own articles on my own podcast. It feels kind of wrong sometimes. Anyway, one more segment here today. Going to get a player season review out of the way that that is, you know, it's not going to require me and Adam. It's not a player that we devote a full episode to. He only played three games with the Pacers. Naz Mitrulong, let's take a break and talk about him. What a tough year for Naz. I mean, tough might be the wrong word. He was really injured, and all the credit to Scott Agnes for the great reporting that he has Bell's palsy, right? One day he just woke up and realized that his smile was a little off, and he was, like, getting numb in his face, and he has Bell's palsy. So that's why you haven't heard or seen Mitrulong in a while. I don't know how, like, quote-unquote healing or preventative measures go for that or what it means for him potentially coming back to basketball, but Scott's article came out in December. He has not played for the Pacers since well before that in November. But we can talk about what he was supposed to be, his expectations, things like that. So Naz, two-way guy, already 27 years old, I want to say. 26, I was close. I knew he was older for a two-way guy. When he came to Indiana, you know, a lot of those two-way contracts are used for younger guys as like a fake development tool. Like, oh, we got this young guy in our organization, whatever. So when you have an older guy like Naz, I think you can safely say either he's injury insurance for your pro team, which was a little bit true, and we'll talk about that, or he's there to make more money and make your G League team good, and or both of those can be true at the same time. And I think both were true for Naz because they needed some initiating guards with the Mad Ants, and here you go. Here's your guy. Naz was amazing for the SLC Stars and the G League in years prior. He's on a 2A with the Jazz, all that stuff. Great. Perfect fit to do both of those things. Great dude. Perfect. Let's bring him in. Made all the sense in the world. You know, they didn't know TJ McConnell would be as good as he is for that depth piece. Sumner's always hurt. You know, you need the guard depth. Vic was out. You know, they needed the guard depth. Great. Makes all the sense in the world. Only played 15 games for the Mad Ants and 3 games for the Pacers because of his injuries. So, expectations, injuries ruined his chance of meeting them. But Mitrulong's highs were really good, right? So he, if you'll remember, two of the three games he played in were mid-November when, okay, so the Pacers play in Houston, right? And Brogdon gets hurt. And then at the end of that game, it turns out on the plane, McConnell figures out, oh, crap, I hurt my ankle too. And Sumner screwed up his wrist at playing in Detroit a few weeks ago. He's out for the rest of the month. So they are now down to a guard, and Vic's out at this point, right? So they're down to a guard rotation of literally Aaron Holiday and Jeremy Lin. Like, that's it. So they are like, all right, Naz, you're playing. They literally threw him in against the Bucks, and they broke even. He played over 14 and a half minutes. They broke even with the Bucks. The Pacers lost that game by 20. They broke even in Naz's 14 minutes. He wasn't awesome, but he didn't suck. It was huge. And so they play the Nets 2 nights later, same scenario. McConnell finally is coming back in the next game in Orlando. They have 5 days off after this game. So they just need Naz to not suck for another game. And he was really good, right? I don't know how many of you remember that game in Brooklyn. Alizé was in the rotation. Naz was in the rotation. Gogo was in the rotation. And they stomped the Nets by 29 points. That's another game that I would consider one of my favorite games of the year, by the way. Naz had 12 points in that game. He shot 5 of 10. Played over half the game. 3 assists. The Pacers outscored the Nets by 21 when he was on the floor. He was really good. He got all his teammates involved. He worked his butt off on D, hit a couple important shots, you know, three assists, spread the ball around. Just played a really, really nice basketball game. And I think we need to not overlook those two games because, if you recall, the Pacers started the season 0-3, right? Things were really rough, and they hit mid-November, and they're just a shade over 500. Who knows what we're talking about if the three games Mitri Long plays in mid-November, they don't go 2-3. Say they go 0-3. They went 2-1. I just said 2-3. They played three games. They went 2-1. Say they go 0-3. Like, all of a sudden, they're below 500 again. And it's been, whatever, 15 games for the Pacers. That we're looking at a lot of different scenarios at that point in time if he doesn't step up to the plate. Now, that's the last we saw him. In Orlando, he was still with the team inactive but didn't play because McConnell was back. Then he went down to the G League for a while. And then the Bell's palsy diagnosis. Not sure how much he played, if at all, since then in Fort Wayne. Fort Wayne, not kind to him, right? He didn't really ever gel there. His shot never fell. He shot 37%, which is super unlike him, like, given his prior seasons, given even with the Pacers. Shot 33% from deep. Was an okay distributor, you know, 6 assists per game, 5.5 rebounds, only 13 points. So not quite what was expected of him statistically there. But again, banged up. Totally makes sense that the season did not go great for him. But I think his highs with the Pacers were exactly what they needed him to be. Hey, we are screwed with depth right now. We, like, literally need you to play. And he did a great job stepping up in those games. Now, he has 3 years of NBA experience, so he cannot be on a 2A next year. I do not think he has shown enough to get a roster spot with the Pacers. But he was really helpful at a key time this year. So all the credit to Naz. I'm not sure what his future holds in the NBA, but he was helpful for the Pacers for a brief moment. So that's a successful 2A contract. To me, if you are on a 2A and you come in for three games and legit help the team, great, awesome. That's all they can ask of you. So credit to Naz. I wish him well in the future, but I do not ever see him playing for the Pacers again. Maybe the Mad Ants exclusively on a G League deal, but not the Pacers again. That's all for today's show. Glad we could get another player season recap out of the way, another fake game preview. Tomorrow begins something fun. The tour de media is what I'm going to call it. Going to have a lot of the some guys who work for the Pacers specifically on broadcast or media side, and then some people who cover the team. I'm going to do start the tour de media in April and have them on, see what they're doing without basketball, some of their favorite moments of the season, things like that. Our first one is with the public address announcer, the PA guy, Tim Sinclair. So that'll be fun. Check that out tomorrow. Hear what he has to say. And then Friday will be Adam with another season recap, just like this Naz one. I think it's TJ Warren. I'm almost positive it's TJ Warren, which is an awesome one. So stick around for that. Thank you guys so much for listening, and have a great rest of your day.